Hi, my name is Vinamra Kasana. Welcome back to the Vinamra Kasana Show. The conversation you're about to listen slash watch is with Raj from Stoa School HQ. We made a funny joke about the HQ part of that, which is India's alternative to a traditional MBA. They run a six-month cohort-based course, which I think is super cool, that you can check out on their website. In this conversation, we discuss cohort-based courses, the future of EdTech in India, why he thinks Kanye West is cool. Amazing conversation also about Goan culture, food, and just the state of the world that we live in, the internet, and a lot of anti-PC stuff, which I think will give you a much needed, much fresh perspective on what is usually considered taboo in a founder's world. So enjoy this conversation, and if you are interested in learning how to write and how to become a better writer and how to cultivate a writing habit, you can sign up for my mailing list at writinghabit.in. That's right, writinghabit.in, where I will send you emails and prep you up for the writing cohort that will help you how to write better on Twitter, which we will be launching sometime in late October. So make sure you check that out. And for now, tune into the conversation with Raj. What's up, Raj? Before we begin the podcast, you are, of course, Raj from Stoa School HQ. I wanted to ask you, what's with HQ as like a startup prefix? I noticed this on quite a lot of Indian startups. Is that stand for high quality?
Well, it's supposed to be headquarters. And I think it's one of those memes that are not, called out as being memes. It's just, I think, a trend which pretty much picked up in the US. Kisiko apne company ka Twitter handle nahi mila hoga, right? Subsquatter must have taken it. So kya, kya fix kare at the end of it?
Right.
Well, must have been the question. Ek bande ne HQ dal diya, and then after that, sure, everyone's been following that trend, right? It's a good thing that you asked. We also are doing it because there is this Stoa school in Edinburgh, which, I think shut down this year.
Yeah.
And they pretty much own the @ Stoa school handle, right? If that handle was available, I would have, of course, gotten that. But since that's not the case, we've gone for Stoa headquarters. Mm. All right.
Yeah. Let's talk about Stoa also, because I have a friend who goes to Columbia. He's also a content creator, and he actually is a part of this thing called Stoa Kulikua, which is a group that helps people become more, for the lack of a better word, intellectual by steelmanning arguments on either side. So, I mean, I'm assuming you picked Stoa up from Stoic philosophy. Is there like a story behind using this name, Stoa?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. When we were looking for a name for what we were about to do. This is a very extensive search, right? I think we almost considered about 40 different names. And at first, the name Stoa was not the one. That was not our top choice, right? But then slowly grew on us because of all the meaning associated with the word, right? Stoa, if you look at it, is a Greek architectural element, right? It is a covered pathway. Right, under which people would sit and have conversations, right? Under which people would sit and learn, share things with each other. And that is how the word Stoic, even gets its root, right? From Stoa. Because under the Stoa, right? These people used to sit and discuss philosophy under the Stoa, and hence people used to call them, these are, Stoics. The people who sit under the Stoa, right? That's how the term sort of came in. And I think it vibed very well with what we wanted to build, an institution, learning in communities, right? Like sitting together with other people and learning with them. And I think as a marketeer, you would know, okay, it helps having a name which is already not beaten to death. And it's very rare to come across a Latin, whatever, Greek, Roman type name,
right,
which is not beaten to death, right? So this fit ticked the SEO, whatever, point as well. And that's when we decided ki there's a lot of meaning, clear, clear on Google, this is the name we should sort of take. And it's also short, right? If you think about it.
Yeah, it's very memorable for sure. I'm just going to dissect it step by step, but like, I wonder what the lion stands for. Are you just saying that we're maybe the industry leaders or like just, I don't know. Is that just like a cool emoji?
I think the lion is about courage, right? I think when we started off, when we were looking at the color palettes, the themes, right? I think the whole Harry Potter scene, you know, Hogwarts and especially Gryffindor, that was an underlying theme playing in our heads, that vibe. But the lion stands for courage across different cultures and traditions. And that's what I feel good business leaders need to have, right? You may have all the gyan in the world, you may have all the credentials you've picked up in the world, but what good is all of that if you don't have the courage to go after a problem, which seems next to impossible for someone else, anyone else, in fact, right? What does it take to go after the impossible? It's purely courage, right? No other quality sort of dominates when it comes to insurmountable challenges. So that is why the lion, sometimes you have to make the impossible happen. Right? And that's what we want our people to be like, right? Those are the qualities we would want to see in our people.
Got it. We're going to return to courage in a bit. I wanted to discuss maybe the intricacies of running a cohort-based course. For those of my listeners, this podcast was inactive for a while because I was focusing on other endeavors. I've just switched it on. For those of my listeners who do not know, the cohort-based course is roughly a video-centric, live education-centric course that is taught to groups of people and you learn with others. Right, you share ideas, give each other feedback, and to sort of start off with, how is like a cohort-based course different from, say, something you learn in the classroom? Because now that I'm thinking about it, isn't it exactly the same? I mean, weren't classrooms in school roughly cohort-based courses?
It's just that you know, there's no internet marketeer sitting there trying to build a culture or trying to sort of, you know, create a myth. Right, that was the only difference, I believe. But you're right. I think it's not too different from what we used to call as classes, right? I think on the internet, classes or cohorts come and dissolve much faster. Like they form and they dissolve much faster. If you're in a physical setting, your schooling or college, I think degrees would at least go on for 2 years. But on the internet, what's been happening now is that things have been much more snappy, right? Like cohorts are forming and disbanding in like a period of 6 months, max to max a year, right? I've not seen a year-long program, in fact, right? It's been 6 months max, right? Mm. So that, I think, is one big difference, just the compression, time compression, right? Other than that, yeah, man, it's all the same. It's, I think the other factor is diversity. Right, the backgrounds that people come in with. But that also, I mean, if you go to a business school or any professional degree, right, you'll still see that diversity. So I wouldn't say this is anything revolutionary, right? We've all had like very physical world analogs of this happening for centuries now.
Coming back to cohorts, right? We've sort of been circling around what exactly Stoa does, because I had all these intricate introductory questions that I wanted to get out of the way before we actually dove deep into like what you do exactly, right? I've grown up around the Generation X of my parents. Maybe there isn't really a Generation X in India, it's just an American concept anyway. But I've seen them all tout first engineers, then switch over to, you know, IAS and UPSC folk. And then finally, when they see that you are slightly classy and sophisticated and have, you know, the very first shapes of becoming some kind of an intellectual, they often suggest a B school education in India, right? Mm-hmm. And then there is a huge economy of comedians, bankers who all use B schools as sort of like the institutions that help shape them, their personalities, etc. So I've only seen this culture from from outside. I haven't been a part of it. I'm just wondering why you decided to specifically, you know, build an alternative to an MBA, right? And then build it in a way that's, again, you talked about courage, right? You call it alternative MBA, but, you know, considering it's all online, it maybe does not have the same accreditation that, you know, a big physical institute would. Considering all those risks, why did you decide to solve this specific problem?
So to be honest, I mean, I myself don't have an insider's view on what happens inside an MBA, right? My co-founders do, but I personally don't have that background, right? I got into business purely by accident, right? I just wanted to fix a few problems and I struggled and I realized that the only way out is to embrace capitalism and, you know, like take advantage of it and go about solving the problems that I wanted to solve. That is democratizing opportunity, right? Like helping people in smaller towns of India, especially, get access to opportunities that otherwise metro kids or people abroad would get, right? That is the mission that I've been on for the last, I would say, almost a decade, right? And I think one big realization here was that, you know, as you mentioned, almost everyone who's, let's say, the age 25, by the time you hit 25, at least ek baar socha hai zindagi mein, are MBA karna hai ya kya? Like, maybe you don't want to, maybe you passed that, you know, station, but maybe you're actively prospecting, but everyone has given it a thought, ki karna hai kya? Like, is this something I should go for?
Right.
And that made us realize, you know, why are people not able to, you know, do that? There's so much like, you know, hype around it, but why are people not able to go to the other side? Biggest reasons were, you know, lack of good institutions, right? Like, jo bhi hai institutions, their fees are like sky high, right? Mm. And hey, I have to leave my job for 2 years, 1 year, whatever, in the case of a few institutions, to get to the goal that I want to reach, right? Like, be a better business professional or be in control, right? Be a better manager, right? So what I think the angle that we came at this was, you know, like with the pandemic, the everyone's embraced online education finally, right? Doing things online helps you be more agile. Ki, you know, I don't have to invest a few hundred crores in setting up a fancy campus, right? And taking 4 or 5 years for that whole campus to be ready and all of that, right? I can just spin up a school today, right? I can spin up a school in an hour if I want to. And I can start admitting people and they don't have to pay a bomb because there's no infra investment besides Zoom, right?
Right.
And we can deliver the same sort of education at a more iterative, you know, rate. Like I can iterate much more faster because I don't have, you know, AICT, whatever overseeing me. I don't have to have professors who have a PhD. Right. I don't need professors, academic type wale. I can get people from the startup ecosystem, right? And of course, solve a big problem. That is, people in India, a lot of people starved of opportunities. They have potential, but there are a lot of blockers, right? No credentials. I don't understand this culture or startup culture. I don't know where to start approaching, you know, kya karna hai startup mein? What does it work like? There are issues over there. And on the startup front, they want to hire. Like right now, capital is scaling much more faster than talent. Like hundreds of millions of dollars are pouring in, but like those equivalent number of people aren't coming in, are not ready to sort of run with that money, right, and deploy it.
Yeah.
So there was an issue there. There was an issue here, and we were like, why don't we, you know, bridge the gap? Why don't we help talent understand what happens inside startups? Give them that confidence. Polish them, right? Give them that finesse with which they can command control of a situation and, you know, hand them over to startups, like help them join startups. It's a win-win for all, right? It's people earn more, people have more meaning and purpose in life, people are professionally and personally growing faster, and so are startups, right? Investors get returns, founders are happier, HRs are more at peace. And of course, for doing this match, we also can build an institution, which just keeps growing, right?
Right.
So I think that is what really, you know, when we sort of bumped into this, that we can make this happen for business roles, we just jumped on it, right? Especially because I think two of my co-founders had MBAs. So they knew what went inside and how useful or rather not useful a 2-year whatever program was, right? And me, like from an outsider, I knew all the struggles, only the struggles.
Right.
And I didn't want other people to go through these same struggles, right? Doing business, upskilling, because I'm a physics graduate. I have zero understanding from Goa, right? Like I was not born and brought up in like chatter around, are kaun sa stock upar ja raha hai, niche ja raha hai. Everyone around is like, chalo FD mein paisa dalte hai types, right? So I want to help more people like me who come from backgrounds like me, just get into this world of jargon filled world of business. Right.
Absolutely. I agree with you, especially about small town India, because I also am right now in Faridabad, which is a city right next to New Delhi. So I coined this term called we're the armpit of Delhi or the ugly cousin of Delhi. So we always used to look up to Delhi as if, you know, go for a day out, like, oh my God, I'm Delhi chale gaye, right? So there was no culture here. So we all either joined the industries or became digital marketers in Delhi or did stuff like this, set up a table, do podcasts, you know, run a cohort, which maybe is a testament to the sort of businesses that will emerge from this very hyped buzzword now, creator economy, as we like to call it, right? But it's incredible because just like you said, we were able to set up our first cohort, no ads, no nothing. Just straight up cold calling, people who already subscribed to me and just saying, hey, we're running this, do you want to test it out? And just did it over 2 weeks and it was incredible. So I'm amazed that it took nothing beyond having a webcam and a PC, you know, to facilitate that. And then again, like you mentioned, just being able to offer some kind of serious advantage to school graduates, right? Who were you have this space between your undergrad and your MBA where you sort of are like undergrad or your later life, where you're sort of like, should I do the MBA? So it's like being able to just offer that value. I was like, this is tremendous. And you do this on a larger scale. You do this for like maybe people who've been in the industry for a while and you get, I noticed that you have Ankur Variku and Nitin Kamath as well on that. I'm just wondering what it takes to maybe acquire this talent to be a part of your cohorts to teach for you. Mm-hmm. You know, I say this because these people happen to be incredibly busy. These people are also, I mean, I know Ankur is a creator, does a lot of his stuff. So how do you sort of make sure that they kind of follow some aspects of a university education, some structure, while still delivering value?
I think that is, I think, where the you know, like, let me actually take a step back and walk you through what we believe is the entire, you know, the three part act, right? Okay. of MBA colleges or, you know, just business education. One is the difficulty or the intensity, right, with which people try and get in, right? That is your whatever. For your IIMs, you have the CAT and so on. In our case, it's the marketing. We have to, since we are not more than a year old as an institution, we have to filter through the noise and find the right people that we want who will form the base of our culture, right? So one end is marketing. The middle end is, you know, the intensity of the program itself, the struggle, right? If people are dropping out, I think people need to be dropping out because, man, this is like a fucking tough program, like, you know, like military style training, if I'm to call it so.
Right.
People are not dropping out. Yeah, people are not dropping out of boredom. Ki are kya chal raha hai, webinar chal raha hai, din raat, right? It should not be that. It should be ki bhai fat rahi hai, right? Like, bahut fat rahi hai. Isiliye, like, I can't keep up, right?
Yeah, only when you have that. Do you get penalized for that sort of slang-ish language in the startup ecosystem? Because I love it, but
I think yeah, I mean, not everyone's happy with me, right? Even in, I'm in fact blocked from running ads on Twitter because I used the word fucking once in one of my tweets. It's like a innocent tweet, man, but yeah, like, you're not gonna be seeing any ads from me on Twitter ever. But that's, it's just the honesty, right? It's just what it is at the end of the day, just emotive. So I appreciate
that more. I just considering that, I mean, like I said, maybe it's because you're younger founders, right?
I think if I become a bada aadmi someday, I'll be scrutinized much more, but for now I can get away with it.
For now, you can be slightly canceled. You don't have to go delete your old tweets now. That can happen 10 years later.
10 years later, right? So the point being, that is the second bit wherein you have intensity, right? Mm. And the other, the end is placements, right? And how do you, if you look at IIMs, they've managed to crack FOMO across the board, right? There's just FOMO at admissions, FOMO in the program, FOMO at placements, whatever, right? So placements bit is the FOMO. Now, zoning in on the middle part, right? The intensity of the program and designing it with other people. I think the philosophy that we follow now is that first cohort, by the way, like Aditya, my co-founder, he ran the entire first cohort. Like every day he took a class for 3 months straight, right?
That's non-stop. Crazy.
While he had a baby, right? Like a one-month-old baby. So that's just like a madness. I can't imagine how one can pull that off, but that's the whole point of co-founders, right?
Right.
The sort of transition we've seen right now is ki, let's just bring in the best people, right? That's the approach we have.
Mm.
Figure out who are the best people in the ecosystem who can capture attention, inspire, right, motivate, show people ki, this is what is possible in marketing, in operation, supply chain. You know, like how can you make it like jazz it up and excite people, right? Mm. You look out for those people. Look out for people who can pose interesting questions and problems. Right. I think that is also an art. How do I design an interesting problem, which is not too tough, nor is it like a cakewalk. I mean, it's not too tough and it's not too easy, right? And we go out, hunt for people in the ecosystem, usually senior executives, right? VCs, CEOs, whatever, founders, who have that kida ki, you know what, like I can see the world so well that I want to share it with other people. Sab log to book nahi likh sakte, time nahi hota hai logon ke paas to sit and distill thoughts. So this is like a 1 hour slot wherein we get people for you. They are in the right state of mind. We help you, you know, bring out the right thoughts and help you deliver, right, on Zoom. That also I think is an underappreciated skill, right? Like how do you hold attention on Zoom? How do you make that performance happen, right? From, you know, the music, at the start of the session to, you know, like interactivity in the middle of it. Challenge is how do you get people to keep their cameras on and be, you know, engaged and full of energy? And how do you then, you know, whatever, tone it down and close the session, right? That I think is a art in itself. That's something we help people with. Keep Zoom pe aise karte hain, but people bring in their, you know, we let people bring in their expertise, their sort of flair to the program. And I think that is what it makes it really special. If we had academic faculty coming in and just sitting and teaching and just teaching, right?
Mm.
I don't think that would have worked out as well, right? Because real world loops don't come out when you're in the academic world.
Two or three things pop out from that. Number one, I did a degree. I haven't done a master's degree. I did a degree in advertising from Boston University. And all the professors that I keenly remember, fondly remember, have been people who spent 10, 15 years in the advertising industry, made a fuck ton of money, made amazing ads, then decided to sit in that whole Chanakya type role and decided to teach. So when they said something, their words had a gravitas. We listened. And in all of their classes, they didn't just go on because they were used to performing and teaching in, you know, sort of like madmen-like rooms where you're supposed to dazzle the client. So we saw a lot of that performance aspect as well, where it's not just like exhibit A, exhibit B, do your homework. It's also like, how do I hold this class's attention of people with diverse experiences? Some of them are probably international. How do I do all of that while also communicating the nuance of, you know, learning how to advertise?
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing to me seeing how, for some strange reason, I'm sure that maybe, you know, nothing against academy, maybe academics do really have, you know, more nuance. Maybe they know all the details. But it turns out, just from my own experience as well, retention is something that creators are slightly better at than academics. Like, I just think traditional academy is massively lacking when it comes to the performance in teaching, which I think most people miss out on just because they have 10 years, you know?
I think the best professors are always the best performers, right? There's no doubt. Even in college, I think the professors which had the most respect are the ones who could hold your attention even if you were going through a shit phase in life, right? And you wanted to just snap it out or whatever. But this professor ki class, I'm going to go sit there because ye show lagayega, right? Achha wala show.
Right.
Lagayega. So I think that is something that is true in the university, academia world. The good part about online is that you can scale that, right? If you have one good person who can deliver, I'm sure you can hold, you know, attention of as many people as you want. Now, here's a nuance, right? I feel bad college professors generally have the advantage that I've locked people in the room. You can't like run out of a room, right? But I'm sitting on a screen. I think people have gotten mastered like the art of typing and, you know, like scrolling something while still nodding right. in a meeting. And, you know,
only in the last 2 years, by the way.
Yeah. Only in the last 2 years, people have mastered that art. Right. But in a physical world, you just can't really do that as much. Right. You can't run away. So it makes it look like, array, people are in the class, must be, you know, something good. On top of that, attendance requirement in India and so on, right? That just makes it more of a trap. I think B, right? When it comes to the online teaching setting, you can use so many different cues like breakout rooms, which are difficult physically. If I am to get people to work in groups and so on, it's just so much noise around you, you know, like just so much chatter. Logistics may time chala jata hai. Whereas here I can just spin up a breakout room, can put people, I can
also
send
forces
messages to
people out of passivity in a breakout room because they're supposed to speak.
Absolutely, right? When I put two people in the breakout room, I don't think both people can just decide to do nothing. There's pressure, right? To speak and to talk. So you can make all of these things happen. And hence, you don't need a day full of classes, you know, which is like, meh classes all packed throughout 9 to 5. You can have two good classes a day which are power packed, which require you to bring energy to the table, of course,
right?
But deliver the same amount of impact, right? And let other people let the rest of the day go in just thinking or whatever, doing on your own. So I think the whole productivity energy ka dynamics also completely changes online because it takes so much from you to be active on Zoom. It's tiring. So you're forced to sort of pack in that intensity rather than just do what schools are currently doing in India, which is just, you know, like everyone, teacher is also off video. Teacher is also off video. Everyone is off video. 1 hour, someone's going to talk and just go. So yeah, but that just reminds me ki mass market, the idea of online education is very tainted because of such what people have seen. People are cheating, people are just muting and sleeping, whatnot. So mass market online education, I think, is very, very tainted in the last 2 years. But in this small cute little bubble we have on Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, I think that is where the real magic has sort of
begun to emerge, certainly. I'm yet to see more. I want to see more cohort-based courses on a wide variety of subjects. I mean, what you do is offer an alternative to an MBA, which is still like a traditional institution. But I would love to see more Indian creators and even startups doing stuff like, you know, cohort-based course on, say, magic, even as weird as that sounds, right? Allowing people to sort of like how they pick subjects in college, pick very specific esoteric subjects they like, having cohort-based courses on that, I think would be wonderful. I wanted to discuss sort of one thing that pops out is even in my college, I did 4 years, right? I had a bunch of classes that I took, some were required. You know, dealing with fluff was inevitable. maybe the true substance in the entire class was learning how to write for an ad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was all this needless information that I think if you have a class of 52, 80% will have a consensus saying that this is needless, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of maybe the professor's ego or requirements to fill up the hours, all of that, right? There is clearly so much fluff that it takes so many years to just realize this is the substance and the majority of it was just me wasting my time. I think one thing, and I would love your opinion on this, that online education does is it leaves no room for fluff because people will just close your video, you know, turn off your Zoom call. So you can really say, okay, this is a very outcome-based course like you guys offer. Like, these people got this job at this specific startup because of this. It isn't like some bullshit salient features about, you know, you become more robust, more dynamic, all those things, or just, you know, take you through 4 years of hell only to give you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think when we started off also, right, there was a lot of focus on, you know, because since we were building an MBA bootcamp or alternative, whatever you may call it, our starting point was, of course, chalo, let's just take MBA curriculum, throw what's not useful and, you know, keep the rest and try and package it in an online fashion. Increasingly, we've realized ki, what really works is just doing. Right? Like getting people to sit and do, build a product, build an MVP. Yellow design brief for a cat food brand. Write copy, write creatives, right? So I think the doing bit, right, is what a lot of people lack on. People are, as you said, full. People have learned fluff, and hence people are full of fluff, right? Because there's no demands. Assignment hai, kahin se copy kar liya, chori kar liya, kuch teacher ne kuch bhi grade de diya.
Very low academic integrity throughout the nation, by the way.
Yeah, throughout the nation, right? There's very little, and there are, the incentive systems are also not in place. Because when people know ki end mein, like, jisko achha job milne wala hai, that person will have to go through JEE or CAT or whatever. Everyone else is like light, right? Like, mujhe kyu karna hai? Like, pass ho jaunga, bas itna hi hoga. So there is that lack of integrity across the board, which I think has put us in the slump as a country, right? And I don't think there's an easy fix for it. Even if we put one good teacher in a school who upholds integrity, whatnot, they will either lose their mind and leave the job or sort of just drink from the same well and, you know, be like,
that poor society is a good example.
Right? Absolutely. So I think, wahi hota hai, and I think that we are all these, I think, God-based programs, we will actually survive, right, and then and make it to the next few years, are the ones which will make people produce work.
Yeah.
Right? Which looks like magic to people on the outside.
For sure. Just to slightly interrupt there, I've done a bunch of writing courses. I spent so many rupees on a degree that taught me writing. But the only true writing I learned was through college when I was creating content and just nonstop writing briefs as samples on my own. So in my cohort, I teach people how to consistently write for 15 days, right? And then they do it. And because it's so outcome oriented, there is no excuse. Like, I'm not saying, ye dekho, 6 lecture writing, arre likho na. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, right? Just write, just do, just whatever, go out and talk, right? And here's the difference, man, when it comes to business, right? Let's say I take you to a coding bootcamp or whatever. Wahan pe I can write code and I can see the output, right? I can see the result. Are ye chalta hai, right? Ya nahi chalta hai. When it comes to business, let's say marketing, you can write like some creative copy, this, that, but unless you put it out in the real world, see whether people react to it or not, you don't know ki chal raha hai, nahi chal raha hai. So it's not only that you have to create, but you have to put it out in the world, get feedback, bring it back, iterate and get better. Those who are successful in this, establishing this loop in themselves, are the ones who are like order of magnitude, like up there in terms of capabilities than everyone else. Like, ye 500 rupees ke Udemy course kharid ke by doing digital marketing, again, you're just consuming, right? There's very little that you're creating and putting it out and then getting feedback on and doing that loop.
Right.
So I think in business, it's even more difficult to do this, to do and to get feedback and learn and do it again, as compared to coding, anything else, in fact.
I want to switch gears for just a second and speak about Sosegado. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's what I got from Wikipedia is it often viewed as the relaxed, laid-back attitude toward life that is said to have existed historically in Goa, a former Portuguese territory. Footprint travel guides describe it as a relaxed attitude, enjoyment of life to the fullest. I did not know this word until someone recently told me about it. And I love my coffee. I've been very type A in some aspects and completely type B in others. I was late for a flight back to Delhi and I was rushing to get some coffee for my friends and I. And I, you know, looked up on Google Maps, some cafe, found some nondescript cafe that said outside coffee in big letters. It was a semi-cafe, semi-boutique. I think it was in Panjim or maybe Asagao. I can't remember now. And I walked inside. I was like, I need 4 coffees immediately, please. Just like frenzied. This was an Israeli woman. She's like, hey, man, chill out. First, you relax. But I could not relax because I was, you know, waiting for my flight. So I was like, she insisted I relax or otherwise I would not get the coffee. Now, I'm hoping that she was maybe following this Sosegado, maybe a little bit too fanatically because she was from abroad. Maybe that's how it's done. But I spent almost a week in Goa, I noticed that I wasn't sure if I could apply this concept of laid-back lifestyle to everyone because there are anomalies like you who are, by all means, running a fast-paced startup from a place considered by the rest of the nation as laid back. Now you've been born there, you've lived there all your life. I'm sure you have a very interesting, very men ko batata hun sach kya hai take on that. So let's just go with that.
Ha, I mean, I think I'm an anomaly, right? In the first place, I think you rightly recognize that. Like, I'm sitting in a village currently, whenever I go out for a walk, I see people just chilling out on their porches, right?
Yeah.
Like old people just like chilling out, and I'm like, man, I'm probably one of the youngest around here because anyone who gets, you know, to 23, 24, 25, they buzz off to some city or whatever to
right.
work. Right. And here this dude roaming around and random parts of the day trying to whatever work. So it's quite an interesting contrast, super sharp contrast. I'm convinced no one has any idea what we do. They just see us inside our houses all day. It's crazy, but Sosegad is a vibe, man. It's
called Segad.
It's, I think in Konkani you pronounce it as Sosegad, right?
Okay.
You chop the O off, but the Portuguese, I mean,
okay,
where the word comes from, there it is spelled as Sosegado, right?
But it's
like
used in
some
common parlance, like in
it's,
is
it's,
it often mentioned in
families? Yeah. I mean, or between friends, are to Sosegad is like that.
Oh, chill.
Chill. Right? It's like chill.
Oh, damn. I had
it's
no
like,
idea. That's crazy.
I think, now that I think about it, it's essentially chill, right? Like, that's a vibe I think we've got going, right?
Yeah.
For a lot of interesting reasons, I think, started off pretty mineral rich, right? Like, also like, trade, a lot of trade used to happen and so on. So when there's money flowing, when there's wealth flowing historically, you tend to be a little more relaxed, right? If you go to like Europe, same vibe, right? Like there is familial wealth for most people. They can afford to chill and go about their life that way. So in fact, I was in Allahabad, right? For 4 months in 2016, I was doing an internship there at a physics institute. And I was like, amazing, today is a Sunday, it's a holiday, let me go to the city, you know, like, you got on a Sunday in Goa, you know, everything's shut.
Yeah.
You'll barely see like places open, right? Like shops especially. You can easily assume that nahi milega, whatever you're searching for, hardware and so on, to nahi milega, pakka. I go to Allahabad and I'm like, wait, this is just like any other day here. Like, what's going on, right? So it was a big culture shock for me to realize ki Sundays as a concept, like, is not, is it's yeah. not an Indian, you know, it's not an Indian thing. Rest, taking that rest is not an Indian thing, because of course most people in this country are like just fighting for survival, right? Forget thriving, they're just trying to survive. And when that's the case, like, thought of taking a holiday or just taking a day off a week is insane, because someone's going to outcompete you, right? Like, if you don't keep your shop open, dusre wale ka dhanda hoga, right? So
right.
there is that intensity in the rest of the country, which is not really around here.
Mm.
Right? It's not really around here. Though it's changing over the last few years, right? As more and more people migrate in,
mm.
That's changing. That vibe is changing. But yeah, I think the contrast really helps me personally, because I know I can step out and be surrounded by greenery and rather slow moving, as people call it, life.
Right.
It's not the case. If I was in Bombay, I'd probably have, you know, just like lost my mind. Because it's chaotic inside and this chaos happening outside. Right? Everyone's in a rush. I like it when you can just step out and not be in a rushed state of mind.
Yeah, right? I think it's very essential. I'm not a medical practitioner, but I found that we're speeding through the week. My team and I are doing various stuff. What really helps is we go to this Faridabad ke like outskirts, and where they do rock climbing. It's all... it's just rocks and beautiful nature, and they all live there like migrants in their own. They build their own house from mud and switch off my phone and just chill there, and sort of resets my senses because they live slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I do, just like you, is I go to markets which, like it or not, still have a slower pace, especially the stalls where the chai is being served or something else. When sort of the local flavor is still more alive, right? Because if you just spend your day on Zoom every single day, you're like, "Arey, us padmi ki meeting hai, ye hai, wo hai, ye wo hai." So I think that's really necessary. And I'm sort of like sad for people who live in extremely fast metropolises, because there is no place to rest. Incidentally, I was going to ask you, the next question is, where do you go to rest? But you sort of give me your answer.
I think, I haven't traveled out of Goa for the last 2 years, because of course pandemic, right? Like
right.
Roughly since it's kicked in, I've not really gone out.
Mm.
But there are a lot of fun things to do, man. Like during the winters, go to the beach, right? It's very European like weather, when you have the crisp sun, yet it's not hot, right? It's still
right.
There's a chill in the air, sweet 23 degree types. That I think that's famous, like favorite winter time activity. Summertime, you're probably just moving more into the forests, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Because that's where there's more cool.
Right.
Hence is amazing for trekking, you know, just there's so much greenery around. You can just
yeah,
go
I
for
saw
your
Instagram, man.
Ride.
It's just filled with the trek footage. I really love it. It does
yeah,
not
man,
look
like
you're building a startup at all.
I think karna padta hai na. Like, I mean, on the weekend, it's that whole barbell strategy, right? Like, you're
yeah.
just working it out for the week. And then for the weekend, you are sort of, you know, tuning out. But I think I want to be doing more and more of that, more and more of the latter, because life's gotten very managerial over the last few months, so to say, right? And as a creator,
you're running an alternative MBA program,
yeah.
So.
But as a creator, it's sort of like you know, it sort of eats into you. Okay, I want that free time to just read. I just want that time to. Do nothing, right? For
yeah.
a prolonged period of time. And I think I'm going to be going back into that zone. I think I'm going to be doubling down on the creator side of things now that the team is sort of in place and, you know, processes are in place.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm in fact, like this is a thing, right? And I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't know what to call myself. It's like, am I a creator? Am I an entrepreneur? Whatever, right? Like, because people draw these distinctions. Ki ye entrepreneur hai, or ye influencer hai, ye creator hai, right? Like,
right.
I don't like these sort of, you know,
yeah.
whatever. Like, right? I think entrepreneurs are creators. They just create companies, right? Like, not content, perhaps at times. And creators can all, I mean, have to be entrepreneurial because you have to cater to a market.
Right.
To survive and sustain, right? So I think I just don't like these, whatever, boundaries that people like to draw.
People like to box people in. Yeah, one of my friends is an entrepreneur, but he mentioned how it's so funny that in India now, thanks to Twitter as well, which is kind of amplified Bangalore as the city for entrepreneurship. So it's also typecasted what the entrepreneur looks like, speaks like, tweets like, behaves like, right? In a lot of ways. And he was saying, we live in the most industrial city in India. It's got the biggest industries. Everyone here is an entrepreneur because they all build factories. And I was like, yeah. And they also scale to 100, 200 people. Isn't that the same as entrepreneurship? Why don't we celebrate these guys? Because they have pot bellies and they're not glamorous and then they're not posting about their Serie A funding on Twitter. Is that, and it's almost very strange to look at, like, there are these two entrepreneurs, but one just has technology and maybe more articulation, maybe more resources. The other is just your average factory owner, does the same thing, by the way.
Absolutely. And it's probably more difficult to run a factory, right? That's probably why I'm not doing it, right? It's pretty much more difficult, right? Because it's more capital investments and more capex investment, right? Setting up equipment takes almost a decade sometimes to recover the investments that you put in. It's not easy. And if you see, most of the listed companies in India are not tech companies. Maybe some of the biggest, like, are all these IT service companies, but
right,
most listed companies that are generating wealth are not so-called tech startups or companies.
Yeah,
I think it's just, so one thing about technology, right? One thing about technology is that it enables more and more behaviors. It enables, like, you to monetize more and more capabilities that you have, right? Or behaviors that you have. Previously, people had the capability ki chalo, I can physically set up a factory and, you know, like, put things, you know, together, get people, get the things running, set up distribution, you know, in a very physical way, right? The Unilever sort of level ground pay distribution.
Right.
Those people could really do well because technology was all transport, mechanization, and so on. With tech coming in computers and code and so on, people who were probably not suited to that world of running a physical setup and so on, people who are more like, let's say, content creators, right? People who could think algorithmically, devs, all of those type of people. जिनको हाथ से काम करना इतना पसंद नहीं है, those people found a way of monetizing their sort of abilities by setting up even bigger companies. So I think that's what technology does. It allows you to monetize more behaviors of other people, right? Like, you have sugar craving, chalo, I'm gonna, like, peddle all these sugar things to you,
right?
And I have, let's say, the ability to code or whatever, or talk to 1,000 people, let's say, I can monetize that today on the internet. So I think that's just the role of, that's just how technology progresses.
Right.
And these bunch of people on Twitter, us, whatever, it's a nerd bubble, right? It's a type of a nerd bubble, right? We like to dominate the world in a particular way. Whereas the physical entrepreneurs, they like to have their own silent, whatever, scene of manufacturing going on. Yeah. If they stop, of course, the world is going to... come to a stall, and if tech nerds also stop, the world today is going to come to a stall, right?
For
so
sure.
I think both of them deserve, like, respect, and I hope India gets, like, more manufacturing businesses as well as, of course, more tech businesses. Sabka bhala hona chahiye, right? Like,
no
one should be left out.
Said it like a equality pro. I want to talk to you, Raj, about again, Goa, and the reason I mentioned that is because I never grew up next to a beach. I'm just wondering, is there, like, a love-hate relationship happening there? Are you you're a kid, you're like, okay, I was beach pe gaya, just like, I don't know. Is there, like, such a thing as being sick of the city that you live in?
I think, yeah, I mean, it just becomes a FOMO nahi hota hai na. You can, if you can access it, if you're living 5 minutes
you
away
don't have
from,
to go through the jokes of right? Goa vacation. But,
So I did. I went to college in Goa, right? And then when you're in college, everyone's making these outside, all meme pages are making these Goa trip jokes. And I'm just like looking at my friends and I'm like, we are here and what plans are we making, right? People at least make plans. What plans should we be making?
हम लोग कांगो करना चले जाते हैं.
हाँ, so that's legit like the thoughts that people get, by the way.
Yeah.
So so I think you just get used to it after a point of time. When you grow up with it, you have access to it all the time. Doesn't mean that there are no people who don't like going to the beach. Once in a while, yeah, it just makes sense. But when you're here, you're like, "Arey chalo, we'll go to Kodai, we'll go to, you know, like Himachal, right? Like, because that is inaccessible.
Yeah,
you've never seen like whatever, some snow or mountains, peaks, and so on, right? So that is like, I think, more fancied because we don't have access to that, and that's a fantasy that you keep.
Yeah.
Also, beaches. The other thing is that for I think a lot of locals, we have our own sort of tiny nooks here and there, local beaches are very inaccessible, no shacks, nothing, right? So there is that scene going on wherein people just have their small spots,
right?
Locals have spots, because otherwise most famous beaches are already captured by
tourists,
right? And shacks. It's a completely commercialized sort of operation.
Did you grow up with an aversion to deep house or techno, or have you finally found your way?
I think there was an aversion as such. I think I was not into that kind of music. But then over time, only music that I've not still been able to crack is metal, right? Like, it seems like a very college scene. That's the only thing I've not cracked. But everything else, I'm at, you know.
Yeah.
Peace with. In fact, those are the all my like 50% of the Instagram ads I see are for playlists, because I really like exploring new music, and Instagram knows that, so they just show me playlist ads.
Do you use Spotify standard playlists, or are you like following some curators?
I have friends who are like solid curators, and I think I follow a lot of these playlist curators on Spotify. Right? More of the lo-fi, chill stuff, more melodic stuff, or good beats. Right? I think I don't talk about this enough, but I think I'm also super inspired by Kanye. Right? Like,
I think,
of course, the man has like done some shit here and there in his life. No,
everyone has
away from that. Yeah, but. I think crazy, man. Like as they say, right? Like if you're a fan of Kanye, you're a fan of yourself, right? And I just like
great tagline. So
I mean, he's honest, right? Like why can you not like yourself, right? Like what's in this world wherein there's on one end there's like a I would say pandemic of people with low self confidence.
Yes.
Right? Why is it not okay? Why is it criminal to come out and say that, you know what, like I like the person who I am? Like,
yeah, you know, I there's this the creator of Dilbert, what's the
comic,
Scott Adams, he has this wonderful monologue. There's this guy called Akira the Don, you know about him? Akira the Don, he got to fame by basically putting in Jordan Peterson's speeches into his songs, making like a motivational lo-fi DJ album, something like that. He has one track with Scott Adams where Scott Adams says low self-esteem is like a virus, you get it from other people. And before that, I never heard of that, and I suddenly started auditing how people will often project their beliefs about their own insecurities and put it on you. And then you listen to stuff like Kanye, or I've never listened to Drake, but I recently listened to this song called Life's Good, where he says working on the weekend like usual.
I love that song, man. I just love that song, because that just captures the, it's got that vibe, right? It's got that spirit.
But my point is, seeing all of that, I suddenly realized, wow, there's an entire spectrum of people who believe in themselves, who are fucking good, who put their sons out there and they're like, hum mahaan hai. And I think there is nothing wrong with that, with everyone sort of putting themselves down and saying, oh, it's okay, we're all struggling, we're all surviving. I think we can do with more victorious narratives on social media.
Yeah, on socials, inside, I mean, and program that inside people's minds, right? So if you really come across someone who respects and enjoys Kanye, I know that, okay, this person is a particular type of a person, right? They're not like, they're not listening to us because it's popular or whatever. They find some meaning or some whatever, right? Like sense in the song. This is one song, I think, Life of Pablo. This was from old album. The song is about how, you know, like his wife back then, Kim, tells him not to tweet, right? His friends tell him don't tweet that shit, but he still does, right? And it's such honesty,
right?
Such honesty, saying that this is life, right? Like, and it involves all these elements. It's not talking about just love and whatever typical romance or you know, like what we're used to, the music that we used to while growing up. It's not bad. Right. It's also about all these modern cultural elements.
Mm-hmm.
There is Twitter. It's reality, right? And yeah, I mean, I've got so many eyes on me, and yeah, but I still want to live my life. I still want to put my shit out there, like thoughts out there, and just that friction, right? Like the lashback. I think I like the drama that is in these songs, in hip hop, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah, hip hop is great. I don't know if you've checked out any of the scene that's popped up from Delhi. I know Delhi rapper Seedhe Mouth were recently in Goa to make an album. They were staying there for a while.
In fact, Goa has a very buzzing scene, right?
Hip hop
scene. Yeah, it's
never.
I'm gonna send you like a few tunes. There's this artist called Sumayoki, right? Sumayoki. I think he's not even 20 yet, right? 17, 18 in that zone.
Yeah.
I've been tracking him for the last.
Is it Konkani or Hindi?
I think this is like something he's made up. Probably some Japanese inspired stuff. It's my sense.
Right.
But like the range is insane. The range is insane, and I if I could, I would bet on that chap, right? He's gonna blow up in the next one or two years, definitely. Right? Like got some spirit in that, right? And that's what I really love about the internet. This person start putting out his tunes on whatever SoundCloud and Spotify, this, that, YouTube music videos, locally produced, right, by artists around Goa. And now he's been signed by a bigger label, right? And more of people are going to be inspired. Ki, hey, man, like, if this chap from my school, from my state, my neighborhood, locality can get there, so can I, right? Why can I not, like, try and put myself out there? Break those shackles, ki, arre, log kya kahenge? People think ye show maar raha hai, right? Like, it's that. It's overcoming all of those local,
yeah,
you know, pressure.
It's tougher here in India because we're a very collective culture, right? So, jo samaj, quote unquote, like we speak about, is just more visible. It's more present in your mind when you make decisions, right? It isn't like, mera naam Michael hai, main Boston mein rehta hun, chalo gaane banata hun. Like, okay, Michael, do your thing, you know? Yahan pe there are other factors to consider, especially, you know, if the contents of your rap are personal, controversial, graphic, you also open yourself up to public ridicule. And if you can get past that, you really, like, it's an incredible, I think a lot of hip hop stars open up a spectrum of expression that has not been available to us for such a long time. We've been getting it off American rappers in the English language, but if we can get it in our local languages, I remember listening to Seedhe Mouth because they're Hindi rappers and they had a lot of angst when they were first starting out. And I also had a lot of angst, as a younger college student, and listening to that in Hindi, anything that wasn't, mujhe tumse pyar hua, you know, stuff like that. I was like, okay. So clearly I can express this. If my favorite rappers is expressing this, ki Delhi mein garmi hai, yahan ye ho raha hai, wo ho raha hai, har cheez, sort of makes it a almost like a safe space to for the listener to feel those emotions. You know, the artist sort of makes like a blanket. You can feel this, it's okay. I don't know.
Absolutely. And the same, right? Like there's Konkani rap. It's, I think, like Goa has a population of not more than 2 million bislak, right? I think at this point of time, but there is rap coming from, you know, coming from people who traditionally have not had a stage, not the upper caste folks, right? It's coming from, I mean, it's coming from across stratas, in fact. You have English rap coming from, you know, the upper caste folks. You have more like local language, right? People coming out of not so well-to-do neighborhoods, putting their music out there, like just painting graffiti in underpasses, right? And shooting music videos, right? I absolutely like, it's happening in my own neighborhood, in fact, like where I grew up. And I'm like, man, this is amazing. Not many people share that sentiment. People are like, "Arey, what are these kids doing?" Blah blah, right? But I'm like, man, these people have, you know, the crazy, like, you know, courage to go out there, paint your name, your artist name, on an underpass, and stand there and dance there with your crew and put it up on YouTube, right? Like, respect. How many people can dream of doing that?
100%. Talking about Konkani music, actually have this song. Let me know if you know about this. It's called Zati by Antoinette.
Doesn't ring a bell, but I'm going to check it out.
Okay. Right? No.
What's the story? What's the scene?
I was in Mumbai and one of my friends, she was taking me around. We were going to Chor Bazaar, trying to shoot a vlog, never released it back in the early days. She's like, I have a song for you. It's a Konkani song. I was like, okay, interesting. She played it. Again, I've never spoken Konkani. What I found very interesting is how, and this could be a complete dud, but I found that Konkani sounds a lot like someone speaking Portuguese or Spanish.
I think it's a very interesting, like other people, I've heard from other people that, hey, Konkani does also sound like Marathi, which, okay, I can understand. Konkani has some overlap with Bengali, which is, I think, a correlation very few people have sort of like brought up, but it's kind of there somewhere. Then I think there are a lot of Arabic, because it was a trading station, right? For the Vijayanagar Empire and so on. You had a lot of like Arabic words sort of come in. So you had barik, which is thin, nazuk. Right, all of these words have sort of like entered our lexicon, and of course Portuguese loan words, right? Like a lot of Portuguese loan words have entered, and the thing with Konkani music, especially older songs, is that a lot of Goans used to be trained in the Western style of music.
That's
right?
What, because this song, and maybe I can play it after this, it has organs playing in the background again, which is not typical of Indian classical music that you've heard.
Then it gets more interesting if you look at Bollywood films which were shot in the 70s and 70s, 80s, right, in that ballpark. There's a lot of like swing elements of swing, right, in the songs. And all of those songs were sort of set and orchestrated by Goan musicians who pretty much had migrated to Bombay, right? Like, because that is where economic opportunities were. Not many Goans get credits, right? You still have your whatever music director, producer, top level people who sit with all the credits. But yeah, like a lot of like all these swing elements, jazz elements, brass band elements were brought in by Goan musicians. And I don't think people sort of like appreciate that enough, right? The producers were all from Goa, bringing in that Western sort of vibe and introducing it to the rest of the country, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, especially because disco music seems a lot like that stuff, the chords, everything else that might have originated from Goa. I'm not sure if Vijay Benedict was Goan. I'm not sure about that. Do you know about Vijay Benedict?
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't I'd give it quite some chance that there are some strong Goan sort of roots there, right? I definitely wouldn't doubt. And also from a classical music point of view, right? Lata Mangeshkar for example, Mangeshi is a town in, it's a village in central Goa. She and her family, right, like her sisters, all come, they have their roots in Goa, right? And they have this, they belong to tradition. The father was a singer. They are now singers, but again, Goan heritage. I'm not trying to like whatever.
No, for sure. I mean,
But I think there's been a lot of cultural influence on the rest of the country, which not if you think of Lata Mangeshkar, I think the people who default think, she is Maharashtrian or, you know,
yeah.
Marathi.
Or you just think of Bollywood. You don't even assume an origin story at all.
Yeah, but I think all of that. And from the Indian side, as well as, you know, from the Western side, a lot of very interesting influences on culture in general, I would say.
And what is it like living in Goa now with the gentrification? Because you've seen it since you were a kid. When I was there after the first wave and before the second one, I noticed there was a lot of entrepreneurial activity. And I mean, I saw your tweet, you retweeted someone else saying that there's a lot of startups in Goa now. I know for a fact that several of my musician friends and other artists moved to Goa in the pandemic, having sort of said, fuck you to Delhi or Mumbai. What is it like now with this exodus of people from other states and like just new cafes, vegan food, new music, all of that?
Yeah, I think in the short run, it definitely looks like a very good economic opportunity for people in those villages, right? Like, I mean, people are flipping land, rent prices have, of course, skyrocketed. I think it's becoming harder day by day for, let's say, a Goan couple, young couple that gets married, that doesn't have jobs in tech or something to do with, you know, the startup ecosystem, whatever.
Right.
Man, it's going to be tough to rent a place and, you know, set up your own life. So you'll usually find only people who have like parents' ka property, whatnot, like sort of making that move out and so on, right? Most people, the bulk of people are probably stuck. Right? So they need to, they're going to be squeezed, increasingly squeezed out. And that's going to be sad. I don't think a solution to this is pushing people out or just, you know, like saying that don't come in. Because then you're killing free movement, you're killing opportunities that are coming your way. It would be by upskilling yourself and sort of stepping it up to what the market demands of you. Now, I know that, you know, like people who are more left-leaning wouldn't be happy with these sort of approaches. Just cater to the market, you know, they're not generally happy with that, but that is what it is, right? Otherwise, tourism, to anyways, our economy is standing on one leg, which is tourism.
Yeah.
At this point, right? Like, if we embrace it full on, we're just going to nosedive.
Yeah.
So we will need to like diversify as a population into other services, into manufacturing, whatnot. And that's going to be quite an uphill climb, I feel.
Have you seen people from other states, who are also your friends, by the way, come in, live there? Have you seen a change in their attitudes? Maybe they slow down, maybe they react unusually to certain customs. How much of Goa do they have to imbibe to live, you know, like to become one?
I think Goa is, it means different things for different people, right? It doesn't mean the same thing for everyone. But it depends. There are some villages which are already so gentrified that you can be a South Delhi or a South Bombay person and feel home, right? And I often remark
in the morning and then have some cold brew coffee in the afternoon. Yeah,
absolutely. Have some blue tokai and, you know, all of that jazz. I often remark, like, there are a few villages around here which are super gentrified. I see shops or whatever, I see establishments, I think that's the best word for them, the buildings, the front and, you know, like fancy logo, all of that. And I often wonder ki what are they actually selling? Like, what is this place about? There are so many shops which have like signboards and I just can't tell if it's a B&B, it's a hotel, it's a furniture shop, it's a restaurant, it's a library. I have no idea. So when you hit that, I think that's the peak, right? When you just, that place is running, Seem to be no economic pressures on it, and for love of God, even I'm not a Luddite. I think I understand a thing or two about the world and about high culture and all of that. Still, I have no idea what happens in this place. Right, that is a level at which a few villages have sort of like gone to at this point of time with the influx of South Delhi and South Bombay sort of people. It's easier, by the way, for me or anyone, if you want to bump into like an entrepreneur or whatever, right? Like, should probably be sitting in Goa and not in Bangalore. In Bangalore, like, you would have to stand in a line to meet people, who in Goa you'd probably just rub, you know, like shoulders with around some cafe or whatever. So that's the reason why I'm not shifting anytime soon. Access is more easier here.
Sir, Bangalore hai pe aage, hum toh tumse baithe hain.
Absolutely, right, absolutely.
Yeah. It's crazy how even in, you have the same switch in Hollywood. Like all the real actors or the real celebrities have now moved slightly north, and then more north, and then more north, and suddenly you have to go find Kim and Kanye in Ohio, you know, which is like far away from LA, which is a testament to how it's very weird. Like all the real players in the market will often try to have like a bird's eye view, but never be in the pulse of things.
I mean, they want to be far away from chaos and just honk and noise and all of that, and just be far away from the troubles that most people on this planet go through, yet be close to people like themselves.
Right.
Like, I think that's what I've been observing. That's where the trend seems to be going towards. And that's just the thing about wealth, right? The more I think about it, it's like people, the underlying feeling is that I want to get more wealthy so that I can just step out of what other wealthy people are pushing at me, pushing at the world. Right? I want to eat cleaner food. I want to eat like, you know, vegan, and I want to eat like organic eggs and whatnot, right? I want to eat things which are not industrial scale. That's essentially what people are becoming rich for. I want to consume experiences which are, again, not industrialized. Even if I'm going to Goa, I won't go to the crazy beach belt. I'll just go to some far-flung random corner where nowhere else comes to, right? I think that seems to be the drive behind people trying to get wealthy.
That's very hilarious that you mentioned that you want to be wealthy so you can have very esoteric experiences. I often think of like a standard rich person bucket list is eating caviar. I haven't had it. I'm not sure what it tastes like, but goddamn it, they've certainly made a lot of FOMO around it.
I agree. I don't think it's gonna blow your mind. I've not had it either, right? But
yeah,
it's gonna be good. But I don't think it's gonna be. I mean, the story that you tell people that I had caviar is probably more of what makes it worth it. Is my sense.
Manu, you know Manu Joseph,
the writer. Yeah.
He's,
in fact, I was just reading something that he wrote today morning, right, about how privilege is a fight between the top 1% and the top 2% in India.
He's caustic with his wit. He's amazing. He's also going to be on the podcast in October. But it's very rare to come across a contemporary writer who can say it as it is, and intuite, make one observation and then extrapolate on the rest of the country and hope he's right. And he's right all the time. One of the things he mentioned, which put a sort of testament to you, is, you know, why rich people want to be away from Bangalore and all this. Like, there is a massive difference in what we say and what we do. All of us want to say, we want to live in Goa and, you know, have a quiet life and subah utke meditate karein aur ye karein aur wo karein. But we keep buying German cars. We keep living in our Gurgaons in substandard living conditions and pollution, which shows the hypocrisy of all of these aspirations as well. Mujhe avocado khana hai, but like, why are you still eating this? You know, chole ka bhatura. Aur mujhe Goa mein jaake na ek alag alternative lifestyle jeena hai. Why are you still living in this high rise in Gurgaon with all this, you know, pollution and stuff? So it's very weird. I think one of the good things about sort of knowing yourself before you get famous or anything else is you can parse through which of these beliefs are just, you know, pushed upon you by high society or people who are influential, which of these are actually your own. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get drawn, right? Once you are Once you've bought into a lifestyle, be it any lifestyle, it's easy to get swallowed by it completely, right? And just follow a playbook. I don't remember the name of this magazine, but there is this one magazine in the US, famous one.
Vanity about, Fair?
Not Vanity Fair, it's about like where to spend money. The purpose of the magazine is essentially telling people, these are the things you can spend money on, right? When you have too much of it.
Yeah.
Right? These are things you should do. So taste making, basically, right? And
yeah.
Once you're on that like checklist treadmill ki karna, like what other people are doing, I have to do it. There is no end to it, right? And maybe it gives you pleasure, right? Like, I don't know, maybe it does give you pleasure, like going to a very fine dine restaurant or whatever. But there's no way to know unless you do it. Mm. But I think it's just the experience. It's just marketeers at work, all right? Trying to do value-based pricing rather than cost-based pricing. So
although I will say, after listening to Tastemaker Joe Rogan speak about salmon, I have had salmon numerous times, and I will say it is worth the price. That fish is divine.
I think, some experiences definitely are. And I mean, I don't know whether I should wish that more and more people have it, because that's just A, unsustainable, and B, that's it's going to happen. That's the march of technology, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to get everything one fine day. That's the promised land of technology. But I think where do we be more, how do we be more conscious of our choices, right? It's a crazy thought maze. I think there's no end answer to it. Right.
We're not looking to get enlightened in one podcast.
Yeah.
This is just a discussion and opening for another time. Before we kind of wrap things down, I wanted to ask you, for both people who attend cohort-based courses and then people who make cohort-based courses, what are like some of the things that they should keep in mind to make the best of that experience? What I also mean is, now that you work with both students with STOA, right? People who attend and enroll, and also creators, right? What are some things that both parties should keep in mind?
I think one common thing doesn't strike me, but I think for creators, for instructors, I think there's a lot to learn from formal education.
Hmm.
From the point of view of...
Such as
I think the FOMO bit, right?
Hmm.
It's not an entirely bad idea. Sometimes people need that push to get somewhere in life. And you have to architect incentives and systems, right? First bootcamp that I ran, this is 2018 coding bootcamp, which is online. I was like, yeah, learn at your own pace, bro. Like, you know, it's a cohort, but you know, we will personalize it. Jo chahiye, wo karo. Jab chahiye, we'll whatever.
Hmm.
And that just bombed because, like, people can't deal with that ambiguity. Ki ye bol raha hai, jab chahiye karo. People can't pace themselves, so you need to people like living in a structure, however much they may claim they hate it, right? There needs to be a structure. How much of a structure? Well, that's a question worth exploring, and it's different answers are different for everyone,
right?
But structure and that FOMO and architecturing key, when will what start and when will what end, that is important. And for students, I think just talk to more people, right? Take advantage of the opportunity to think of it as a transformation that you're going into, right? It's a cohort-based courses, whatever, transformation machines.
Yes.
Right? You go in wanting some particular thing, try and be in that zone by talking to as many other people, because they are all in there looking for that thing, right? Like, the more you get into that zone, immerse yourself in the experience, the more you will be able to take out of it. That's my sort of like, I think
that's very valuable, especially both for creators, because your audiences can often make you believe that you do not need to learn the ropes of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like you, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have lackluster courses from some very top people, which serves to prove the point that you could have taken a couple of lessons from formal education's pedagogy and how to, you know, center things and structure things. And like you said about the students If there's one thing I learned in the first cohort that I ran, a very small experiment of only 18 people, is that just having each other, having people write, seeing people write, seeing other people write while you were procrastinating also helped in helping you get that done.
And seeing other people get jobs.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, man, you
that
see
is a FOMO machine in itself, right?
You see a motivation bump for like 3-4 days, right? Once you are ready, isko job mila, oh fuck, like, mujhe bhi kuch karna hai. 4 days, that whole high lasts. Then it goes down. Then you need to strike it again, right? And get that,
right.
Get that pushing. So that architecture is very, I think, interesting. And that's what, it's not easy to replicate a cohort-based program. It looks like, arey, isne kuch faculty la raha hai, bech raha hai, kuch bana diya brand, main bhi banaunga. It looks easy on paper.
Yeah.
But it's super hard work to get all these parts of the, puzzle sort of working the way you want it to work.
That's true. We experienced that firsthand. Used a bunch of, I had no idea, like, you know, it's not really education, it's just mastering online tools. Half of that is just how many tools it is, like Zoom, Notion, Discord, you know, Noggin, like this new tool, all of the everything's happening. Raj, bro, it's been a blast talking to you. I never expected to bump into your taste with carne and then Goa, but which is why I like conversations like this, very serendipitous. Before we sort of end, do you have any questions for me? Anything you would like to?
Yeah, I mean, whenever next time you're coming down to Goa, I want to see you, right?
For sure.
We should have fun, right? Let us do something crazy here. And I have a few things that will get rolled out by then. I think we will see it live, right? But yeah, I think aajao Goa. That is
for
the one
sure.
Request I have.
Sure, bro. I'm looking forward to it. I have to make a trip down there anyway. I'm actually trying to, okay, full disclosure, I'm trying to relocate there ASAP, but I'm just trying to make all of this happen. Look, there is this friend of mine, he's my team member who works here, so we're also pretending that we're a startup because you can see someone in the background working, right? But we're trying our best, at least I am, to relocate. So for sure, it's always nice to have a friendly face in a
there are many, trust me, they're not all showing up, but there are many.
Fucking A, bro. I wish you the best of luck for Stoa. And people can of course follow you at on Twitter at Kunk Said, that's KUNKSED, and then Stoa School HU, that's how it's spelled, right?
Yeah.
And if any of you listeners and watchers are interested in doing an alternative to an MBA, you can check out Stoa School HU. That's it. Thank you for listening to the show.
Yep, and also follow us on YouTube, right? We've got some good content in the pipeline, right? Stoa School on YouTube. That's where you can get a good fix of business education without having to pay anything but your attention.
Right? Yeah, great thumbnails also, by the way, on the channel.
Thanks, man.